agenda has been circulated. I just want to check if you all have it. Do you all have it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Can you circulate? Can you circulate? Can you circulate before the meeting starts? No, no, I'm talking about this side as well. Remember, we are all in this meeting. It's our meeting. Whilst he is circulating the agenda, we are now on welcome. Well, greetings to you all. I would like to take this moment and welcome you in this very, very important meeting in which you are going, the department is going to present the departmental financial and non-financial annual report. Yesterday, we had a session with the officials from the Office of the Auditor General, and they gave us a helicopter view of the entire sector in as far as the audit outcomes are concerned. The DG also attended, and we were very happy to have him joining us in the meeting on an observer status. And today, we are going to hear from the department on their performance and also on their challenges. But also, where possible, you can also share with us what you see as recommendations that the committee can also look at. Remember, nothing about you without you. So we'll also be interested if you've got any special recommendations that you'd like to put across. We will listen to your recommendations, and then as a committee we will also consider those recommendations. Well, a special word of welcome is extended to the Auditor General's office that is represented here this morning. Thank you for coming. And I know we've got officials from the Portfolio Committee and the honorable members. Thank you so much for availing yourself for this meeting. This meeting can only be a success with your presence and with your quality input. Thank you very much, and please feel at home. This is our meeting. Let's engage, and may I then request that we engage constructively and make meaningful input, but also as we engage, I know that we've got time constraints because we have been, okay, the arrangement of the venue is such that we're sharing this venue with another committee that is going to come in at 2. I'm sure the DG is happy with that one, which then suggests that come 2 o'clock we must be done. Now for us to be able to achieve that, we then have to be short and to the point in our input, short and to the point, because we do not have time and we don't want to miss out on your input. Come in but short to the point, so that all those who want to input in this process are allowed, or they have time to input, and we share the space. Thank you very much. We will now, in terms of the agenda of the meeting, zoom on to item number 2, apologies. Are there any apologies? Let me check from the department. DG?
I think the apology we have is from the minister because of the assignment on the Operation Pakisa, which is looking at how we can revitalize the country's economy, especially in our ocean, right across the country. So there is that project which is currently underway at the present moment, so that we're able to respond to creation of employment and maximizing the contribution of our ocean into increasing our GDP.
Okay, there's an apology from the Honorable Minister, Dr. Blaise Nzimande. There's also an apology from the Deputy Minister. Ghana, who is also attending this event. Prof.
Can I just express my extreme discomfort at the absence of both the Minister and the Deputy Minister at their main report back for the year? Other portfolio committees are being graced by the presence of the Minister or the Deputy Minister, preferably both. And we have not seen the Minister at any of our portfolio committees now since the beginning of the term, the new Parliament, and our workshop. And I think that this is unacceptable.
Of the concern raised by the Honourable Member, Mr. Kasim.
Chairperson, I just want to, perhaps as a member of the Portfolio Committee, if we can have a resolution as the Portfolio Committee to appeal to the Minister's office to say if he takes the work that we do or as Parliament seriously, he needs to attend more of our meetings. And not just one like this that he should be here, but more of the Portfolio Committee meetings himself, as well as the Deputy Minister. I think it is not correct if we are taking the work of Parliament seriously and the accounting work that we must do as well, that the Minister must only attend one meeting since the beginning of our term of office. As a member of the Portfolio Committee myself, I believe that as the Portfolio Committee we should be making that appeal and request to say the Minister should be here more often.
Note of this concern also and the recommendation made by Honourable Member Kassim. But then also to share with the members of the committee, we have this complication of our meetings being allocated on Wednesdays, and Wednesdays being the cabinet day. I have raised the matter with the Chair of Chairs, who is looking into the matter, and then as soon as we have a response from his office, we will share that with the Honourable Members. We've looked into it. Because remember, we discussed it, and they said this thing is going to disadvantage us, because remember, the Cabinet is where Cabinet resolutions are made, and they must be there as well. So, and also here, our work is very important, because in terms of the Constitution, both ministers have got to come in account on the work that they are doing. So I'm sure we, with that understanding, shall we then move on again with the apology. I was not done. Come again. Okay. I was not done, but I allowed you intervention. We also got an apology from Ms. Killian, who is attending another competing meeting, which is the Powers and Privileges Committee meeting, but she will join us late. So I'm sure you understand that she has to prioritize this one because it's equally important, but she will be joining us late. All right? And then, yeah. Other apologies I see ahead by Ms. Mutunu.
Thank you, Chair. My hand was up. I wanted to say, I think both the Minister and the Deputy Minister, the activities that they are attending from yesterday, I think they are very important, and their apology is accepted. And I believe that we have just noted what was said, because it's not that we are all saying we need to lodge an appeal, because it was explained from the beginning that on Wednesday, as you rightfully said, that they will not be able to attend because of the Cabinet meeting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for all your input. We now have just had a proposal for acceptance of the apology. I take it that you are seconding an honorable... Okay.
May I ask whether Operation Pakisa is a cabinet meeting, A, and B, whether both the minister and the deputy minister have to be there, or whether there's a whole reason why one has a deputy is so that he can deputize when the minister is unavailable?
Okay. I don't want us to spend time on this because we've got very important matters before us. But then to respond to you, it is a cabinet program that they are attending to, led by the president. It's a cabinet program.
With respect, it's not a cabinet meeting.
But it is a cabinet program.
This is a parliamentary program.
All right, I'm not going to allow this dialogue to go on and on and on. I did say let's embark on constructive engagement. Shall we then not be deviated? And then focus on the agenda of the day. In terms of the agenda, we are done with apologies. I'd like us to move on to item number 3, which is briefing by the Department of Higher Education, training and training on its annual report 2013/14. Honourable members, I'm sure you have received a copy of their presentation. All of you, thank you very much. We will then request the DG to lead us in this presentation. Over to you, DG. Is there anything wrong with the Honourable DG? I nearly said that. But DG, over to you, DG.
Well, thank you very much, Chair, and also appreciate the opportunity to present ourselves in so far as the year under review, which is 2013-14, to the Portfolio Committee. And also, Chair, we always like a longer time to account to the Portfolio Committee, but we respect the constraints of time, as you have indicated earlier on. The presentation outline is actually looking at the pertinent issues in regard to the year under review 2013-2014 as encapsulated in the express annual report and the targets that were set therein. Now, our strategic goals in the department, just as a way of emphasis, is to increase the number of skilled youth by expanding access to education and training, to adequately capacitate individual institutions to effectively provide or facilitate training. Because we know without functioning institutions optimally, we won't be able to realize the goals that were set for ourselves, because that's where the actual training is taking place. 3, to increase the number of students successfully entering the labor market upon completion of training. That's why we are also proud to see that the number of youth participation in this important House Parliament has actually increased, mainly from students who are coming from our institutions within the portfolio of the Department of Higher Education and Training. We see that as an important development that requires acknowledgement. Lastly, to expand research, development, and innovation capacity for economic growth and social development. We're also looking at creating a college curriculum that is responsive to the demands of the marketplace and can transform and adapt quickly and effectively to changing skills needs, with a special emphasis on artisan training. One of the important things is not just the question of training for acquisition of skills, but in ensuring that we train in order for our youth to acquire the right set of skills that are needed by the economy, and also to develop a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning to support an inclusive economic growth path. There is a project which is underway, which is actually looking at the establishment of this institutional mechanism. We're doing it in partnership with the Human Sciences Research Council, VET Research Unit, and quite a number of other research institutes in the country, including our entities as well, and also to sustain a highly effective, professional, efficient administration informed by good corporate governance practices across the system. Now, during the year under review, the expansion of the post-school education and training opportunities remained the key focus for the citizens of the country, especially the youth. The following milestones are a testimony to that effect. The launch of the white paper for post-school education and training, of which now we are working on its implementation so that we can be able to realize its principles and objectives. The publication of the policy for provisioning of distance education in South African universities, because we have realized that if we are to expand the system, it should not only be through contact processes. We must also enhance and expand distance education and provision. As a policy framework for differentiation of the higher education and training system is in place, the policy for generic national artisan learner grant funding and administration system. The establishment of two new universities in Mpumalanga and in the Northern Cape. The establishment of the National Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences. The year 2013 was declared as the year of the artisan, with a view of ensuring that we advocate and conscientize our communities about the importance of artisan training and acquisition of the requisite skills thereof in order to ensure that for our manufacturing sector and programs were able to respond quite adequately to the set of demand of skills that are therein. So we extended the higher education and training aid program, which in the main was located in our universities, into different colleges now. We are working with the HESA and other agencies in this area. Also placed strong emphasis on career guidance with the view of ensuring that as our youth enroll in the system, they do choose appropriate careers from an informed standpoint so that we reduce dropout rate, failure rate, as well as shortchanging registration in our institutions. There were five budget programs during the year under review, with a combined total of 127 planned targets. Now, 82, which is 65% targets, were achieved as of 31st March 2014. 45 of those targets, which is 35 targets, were not achieved. And for underachievement, there are quite a number of mechanisms that were put in place which are ongoing, both in relation to external factors as well as internal factors, including incapacity areas within the department and the system itself. In respect to the targets that were not achieved, the annual report provide details on strategies to deal with underperformance in respect then of those programs, as I have just elaborated. I will therefore share, ask for the presentation of program one, which is administration. The head of that branch will take us through.
Thank you, Diki. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I will be presenting the key achievements as well as providing some explanation on the five targets that could not be met during the year under review. The purpose of Program 1 is the overall management of the department and to provide centralized or shared support services to the department. We had a total of 22 targets, and 17 of those were achieved, and 5 were not achieved, or rather were partially achieved by the end of the financial year. Some of the key achievements, chairperson, without going through all the 17, that highlighted the key of those that were achieved. The first relates to the ICT governance framework. We managed to achieve a target of level three, against the planned level two, which was our target. So we overachieved in that area. The second area that we wish to highlight is in regard to the reduction of the vacancy rate. The target for the year was 10%, and the department managed to reduce the vacancy rate to 7.11%. And there's been significant progress up to so far in reducing that further. The third area that we wish to highlight, which is also a government priority, is the reduction the period it takes for us to fill vacancies. A target of 4 months has been set throughout government, and the department was able to achieve that target on average. And I must say, Chairperson, we managed to do this despite the fact that there has been increased work for the department as a result of us taking over funding from FET, from provinces in regard to FET colleges. The last area I would like to highlight, which is also a key government priority, is the number of days it takes to resolve disciplinary cases. We managed to achieve a target of 74 days in that year against, you know, the government target of 90 days. Now, I would like to look at the areas where we were not able to achieve our target. In the main, on IT, we were not able to, to reach our target of 100% network connectivity. And the reason for that is that there was a shutdown of systems in the whole of government last year, which then contributed to us not achieving 100%, but rather achieving 99.5%. On performance management, Chair, this is indeed an area of concern for the department, because what we have observed is that the managers and supervisors are failing to take accountability in regard to those officials who don't comply with the signing of performance agreements. But the department has since put measures in place to deal with non-complying officials in this area. The fourth area I wish to highlight is in relation to the payment of invoices within the prescribed time frame. The department has set a target of 28 days instead of the 30 days that is an overall target for all government departments. We managed to achieve 30 days and not the 28 days that we had set for ourselves. And really the reason here was related to the fact that claims that would come to the department would be having, wrong bank account numbers and so on. But we are putting measures in place to deal with this. The last area is in the area of fraud cases or the early warning systems. The department has not been having adequate capacity to deal with issues related to risk management. And we are pleased to say that has since been addressed, Chairperson, and as we speak, the department is fully compliant when it comes to risk management, and we have fraud prevention policies and systems in place as it is now. Thank you very much.
I think the best would be that after every program, I allow members' intervention so that we move faster. I will now open for reflection on this presentation by the honorable members. May I see those who would really want to come in? Professor Pozoli and Mr. Ketana. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Your target not achieved seemed very high. I do understand that in the department, sometimes non-achievement of department of targets is a result of tardiness by other institutions that you're unable to fully control, and that is a problem because so much of your work is involved in managing outside institutions. But of those targets not achieved, how many do you think are in your kind of A category of targets not achieved? In other words, seriously not achieved by yourselves and not achieved because of other people's failures.
Thank you. All right. What about you, Mr. Ketana?
Chair, can I ask to the DG who gave an overall presentation, overview kind of presentation. DG, when you spoke about producing artisan, yeah, and that this must be in the needs of the economy, that is what we've been struggling for this country to achieve. But now my worry is that when you mention the structure that coordinates the whole thing, with Human Resource Council and our own unit, how come you don't mention private sector? Because in the main, when you say in the need of the economy, we're talking private sector. I mean, government is there, but mainly it is private sector. Because this artisan, unless the economy employs them, we're still caught in the same thing that people are trained, they have qualification, but they can't work. So during the process of training for experience, even at the end, there must be a buy-in from private sector. And because that we've been getting is we're not getting full cooperation from private sector. And I really don't understand the society of South Africa. Does this mean nation building is still far? I mean, this is all in the interest of everybody to avoid very bad results that could come out of poverty. I'd like to hear what about private sector in the participation.
Okay. Let me allow the department to respond. Meanwhile, other members are looking at other questions to raise with the department.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Out of the charges that the department could not meet, out of the five, the department, I would say, you know, two of them the department would have been in full control of. That is in regard to performance management, as well as the question of early warning systems in regard to fraud cases. But in as far as the ICT invoices, the department really doesn't have, you know, the full control over that. And in regard to the two that I've alluded to, the department has indeed put measures in place to ensure that going forward we do achieve the 100% target. That is on performance management as well as the fraud prevention policies and systems.
Thank you very much, sir. No. I think in the question there are two issues. One is that the development of the credible institutional mechanisms for skills planning to support an inclusive economic growth path. This one is a research-intensive activity that we are undertaking at the present moment. Because in the department itself, we don't have that capacity to engage in that exercise. We then have to collaborate amongst other entities with Human Sciences Research Council, our institutions, sector education and training authorities, and other relevant institutions, including SESA and some pockets that are located in the private sector insofar as assisting in the development and acquisition of the information that we want towards the establishment of this mechanism. So that is the process which is unfolding at the present moment. Now, the other area in regard to artisan development, this one is a collaborative exercise. It involves government, state-owned enterprises, private sector, our colleges. There are various areas of partnership and collaboration in relation to this particular question. For instance, we are working with a joint project with automobile industry in the development of artisans in that regard because of the needs that they have identified and the intelligence they provided to us, and they were willing to come overboard. As a result, quite a number of car manufacturing companies have been sponsoring cars that should be used as training. Renault, Nissan, BMW, quite a number of them are coming to the party with our TVET colleges, ourselves, and those programs are running at the present moment, and also our state-owned enterprises, and the collaboration between colleges and the sitters in locating training within our TVET colleges. So there are quite a number of programs. The private sector has come quite in handy in this regard, in various forms. So German companies, for instance, that are in the country, we are working with them insofar as developing, including the curriculum, which is quite appropriate in the acquisition of certain skills towards the development of artisans. Swiss companies as well, and the other individual companies from the country. That is why the minister is on record in also calling South African companies to come on board insofar as the question of the training and development of artisans in the country is concerned. Taking, of course, the example that has been set by German companies as well as Swiss companies that are in the country at the present moment. Thank you, sir.
Well, the next question is a follow-up question.
Apologies, Chair. There was an additional question that I forgot to ask when I asked my first one. May I ask it?
Yes.
Thank you. On human resource management, one of the things that the Auditor General said was that the qualifications of officials were not duly verified in the department. And this is something that is of huge concern to us and to the government, which has, as part of its anti-fraud measure, said, you know, departments must verify qualifications before appointment. And it's a risk for corruption, clearly, and for defrauding people going to claiming qualifications that people don't have. So can you let me know, or let the committee know, how many officials were not verified and what steps you're taking in order to make sure that that verification takes place in future? And also, do you use SACWA as a means of verifying and confirming qualifications, which is your own organisation? Thank you.
tied up to that one would be, have you developed an action plan after the auditor general's audit opinion and the success in the implementation of that plan? Because one matter that was raised in our engagement with the auditor general is people submitting plans but not implementing those plans. Remember, the aim of the implementation of the plan is to turn around performance, both non-financial and financial performance, so that you can obtain a clean audit. So your contribution towards a clean audit. Have you submitted the plan and have you implemented the plan to the latter?
Thank you, Chair. In regard to the question of the verification of qualifications, I do want to also acknowledge that at the time of the audit or at the end of the year, under question, the department had a total of 79 outstanding cases of verification, but I want to report the person that to date, we only have 7 that are still outstanding out of those 79 cases. And we are working, collaboratively with SAQA in trying to, to even do away with the 7 that are still outstanding. The new ones, as they come, we address them with SAQA in regard to the new appointments. So I do want to say that there has been a lot of improvement. I want to say further that Chairperson, we also entered into an agreement with SAQA that will verify all qualifications of staff in the department, just to to start from a clean process, because what has been happening, we've been doing it only with the new appointments, but we will now be verifying qualifications for all employees in the department. We're planning to have that achieved by the end of the financial year. In regard to the whether SAQA, yes, we are only using SAQA. Unfortunately, we're not permitted to use other agencies by the Department of Public Service and Administration in this regard. Chairperson, on the action plan, yes, it is a requirement that all branches must come up with action plans to respond to the audit findings of the AG. Program 1 is also part of that. We submit our action plans on a quarterly basis. We report back to the, to the DG on how far we've moved in regard to that. And as it is, the branch or the program has a plan and we're implementing the plan, and there's been a lot of improvements in regard to that. The verification of qualifications is just one of them, if I were to mention that. Thanks. If I may respond to a person, yes, we are. Actually, recently we received, I think, about around 69 reports from NIA in regard to security checks. We had a backlog. That backlog has been reduced. We've actually agreed that the department, because of the growth in terms of numbers, from 1 April 2015, the department is going to have its own unit internally that will do a clearance, security clearance, with the assistance of NIA. So there's been a lot of improvement in that area.
Thanks. Mr. Mkiba will take us to program to the director in the branch. The head of the branch is out of the country at the moment. Mr. Feroz Patel, Adingiwa is here.
Thank you, DG, and thanks to Honorable Chairperson and members. As indicated, I'm presenting for Program 2, whose purpose is to provide ready direction in the development, implementation, and monitoring of the department policies as well as coordinating activities in relation to the HRD strategy for South Africa. For the year under review, Chairperson, the program had 19 targets, of which 13 were achieved and 6 were not achieved. I will talk to, at a later stage, the areas that were not achieved and the strategies that were put in place to mitigate that. In as far as the key achievements for the year under review, as with Program 1, I'm also going to be selective. I'm going to talk to a few of the 13. The first one being the integration of the public institutional data into a single management information system, and that relates 100% to the 52 best colleges, 23 higher education institutions or universities, as well as the 21 CETAs. In respect to the career advice services, we had planned to introduce two modules, and what we have done in as far as that is concerned is the integrated education and training career development system, which is a national career advice portal, and Chairperson, this is live on the website that has been provided in there. Also, in respect to career advice services, we have also managed to reach users of this service through multi-platforms. That includes radio, exhibitions, web portal, as well as helpline. And in that respect, we have exceeded the planned targets. Also, we managed to, for the first time, develop the international relations strategy, which was approved by the DG and is now being implemented. In as far as litigations, we managed to deal with all litigations against the department within the time frames as set by the rules of court. May I request Chairperson to revert back to the areas that were not achieved, which are as follows. The research bulletin, which was supposed to have been developed by 31st March, I'm pleased to indicate that this has since been achieved. The reason was that it had to undergo a few quality checks processes, and around April, this deliverable was achieved. Same applies to the investment report on education and training. It was compiled, but it had to go undergo qualitative checks, and subsequently that was achieved. Also, the monitoring report on the implementation of the social inclusion framework was subsequently finalized and approved in April, and that relates to all the programs in respect to social inclusion that are sitting with the universities, and the report thereof contains progress in that respect. We also managed to, after 31st March 2014, to ensure that we produce the monitoring and evaluation report that is required in terms of the mandatory role of the quality councils and SAQA, which is informed by the NQF Act 2008. In respect to the last target that was not achieved, which is the database of international engagements of all public post-school institutions, Chair, I must indicate this remains a challenge. The bulk of the work in this respect has been done. I think the challenge is the program that has been introduced, which is the IT program, is mainly problematic, especially that the universities that are supposed to report in as far as their international engagements are able to report, but the department is finding it difficult to access the program and the information there. But I must indicate that this is work that is currently unfolding, and in due course, this IT challenge will be rectified. Thank you very much.
The chair has temporarily vacated, but she's coming back. Can we take questions on the phase two report? Members, are you sleeping or something? Honorable Pozzoli, one, is there any other? Mem Kunu, any other? Okay, let's take those two for now.
On the database of international engagements, why do you need a database on international engagement? It seems to me to be a very time-consuming, probably quite expensive exercise, which has really very little visible point. So if you could just explain what use that database is going to perform for us and for the department. Thank you. And how much does it cost?
Number two.
Thank you, sir. Mine is on vacancies. It's with regards to the position of DDG University Education. We understand that in terms of the public service regulations, an employee shall not act in a higher vacant post for an uninterrupted period exceeding 12 months. But the current DDG University branch has acted on the position for more than 3 years. When is the department planning to rectify this anomaly?
Yes, you can respond, thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. In regards to the database on the international work, one of the things that we resolve in the department is that in relation to the work that we are doing on the international front, it must not just be in relation to a trip from South Africa to whatever destination in the world. It should be in relation to adding value in the work that we are doing within the post-school education and training system. And that work is taking place in our institutions, is taking place in our TVET colleges, is taking place at the department itself. And other offers, be it donor funding or assistance in collaborating towards development of certain programs, research work, do come via DERCO and at times other departments and institutions in the country. We then therefore took a considered view that said, firstly, we need to ensure that in the work that we are doing in the international front, there are no overlaps, and the programs that we get into are synchronized and they must fit into the work that we are doing as a department. Thirdly, we have to ensure that we improve our administration on the opportunities and offers that come our way from the international front. And therefore, in terms of content, they must make an expressly impact in the work that we are doing in the system. So for those purposes, we thought then it's quite important for us to have relevant, intelligent information in relation to what is happening at the international front. Hence, our institutions, you would find that they even enter competition for rating purposes on the international front, because we are living in the global village, not just as a country and isolated. We have to ensure that everything that is happening
in the international front. We are part of it. We are able to maximize the opportunities to our own benefit in the country. I think that is the basic objective in the name. So in regard to the question of the post, there are processes right now into filling these posts. Interviews were scheduled because as the posts that are in the main are filled as the executive. But not everybody was supposed to participate in there was able to turn up. Then they had to be rescheduled. And I think within a very short period of time, this matter is going to be concluded because there are those concerted efforts at the present moment into ensuring that all posts are filled at all levels in the department. Thank you.
Any further questions? Otherwise, we're taking the next presentation. Yeah, let's have the next presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. The next presentation is Program 3, and it's going to be presented as requested.
Thank you. Honorable Chair and honorable members, the University Education Branch had 34 targets in the period under consideration, and of those, 23 targets were achieved and 11 targets were not achieved. The targets not achieved will be discussed later, but I'm going to begin with some of the key achievements that were recorded for the year under consideration. In terms of those that have been highlighted, the first few targets are related to access to higher education, that strategic goal, and where we did increase the numbers of students enrolled in higher education studies at university. We overachieved in terms of 43,657 more students being enrolled in the system than were targeted. In terms of the percentage headcount enrollment over population of 20 to 24 year olds, this is often called the participation rate at universities. We managed to achieve 19.2% participation rate, which was 1.3% above the target that had been set. In terms of our expansion of the system, another really key achievement was the establishment of the two new universities, University of Mpumalanga and Salt Mike University. These institutions were established in August 2013, and they began their lives with an interim council getting the human resources necessary to start programs at the beginning of the year, and there's been an unfolding infrastructure program related to that. The institutions each have a 10-year development plan, and those are happening at the moment. We're quite happy with that achievement. In terms of the equity targets in the system, in terms of the issue of the number of African students enrolled at universities, there we overachieved as well. In terms of targets, we 68,863 more African students were enrolled than targeted. Also in terms of gender targets, there was an overachievement. One of the things we were surprised about here is, in fact, we're seeing a greater number of female enrollments in our institutions, and we are going to have to think about this quite carefully and do a research project to understand why we're moving to so many female targets. It's above the norm for the system now. Going forward then, in terms of the success rates and the improvement in the system in terms of that, we achieved a higher success rate than targeted by the system. Also, in terms of graduates in key areas, specifically engineering, human and animal health, natural and physical sciences and initial teacher education, we achieved higher numbers than expected. I think that the biggest achievement here is in terms of initial teacher education. We really have achieved far greater numbers than had been targeted originally. And part of that, which isn't identified in this slide, but I think it's in the annual report, is the focus that we've had on foundation-based teacher education, which has been a really important part of the achievements of the system. There, we actually, from the implementation of our program for strengthening foundation-based teacher education, have managed an increase in terms of graduates of 93% since 2009, which I think is very significant. In terms of the postgraduate and research aspects of the system, we did increase the number of graduates, postgraduates in the system, 1,297 more graduates than targeted. And we also had other key achievements in terms of research outputs and in terms of research master's graduates and doctoral graduates. It's not on the slide, but in terms of the research publication outputs, those were increased by 14.4% during this period. The research masters were increased by 27%, which was very significant, and the doctorates by 5.2%. That is in the annual report. In terms of underperformance then, I think there were 11 targets that were not achieved. Of those 11 targets, 4 targets were targets where the work had been done. For example, the policy on adult educators had been completed and was ready for approval, but unfortunately did not get approved before the end of the financial year, and so it's about a late achievement of those targets. So 4 of those targets were targets where we had that problem. And in terms of mitigating circumstances in relation to that, we are going to look at how we improve our processing and systems for ensuring that approval is achieved on these kinds of targets. So those targets were the adult education qualifications policy and monitoring reports on the use of earmarked grants. Other targets that were not achieved, such as the fewer graduates from universities in 2012 and the fewer honors graduates from universities in the 2012 academic year, these targets are system targets that the department didn't have direct control over. We had the through enrollment planning process negotiated these targets with the system, but the system did not produce them. The issue here really is for us to understand why the system didn't produce these targets. Some of them that are not mentioned here, for example, the first-time entry students and the foundation provisioning targets. This will require some research to be done in the system in terms of data analytics and relating it to the actual situation on the ground with our universities. We also have, as we're going forward with the new enrollment planning statement, indicated to universities that we want them to understand these negotiated targets as a compact with them, and that we will be looking at ensuring that they fit within a 2% margin of the targets suggested. And in future, we will be setting ourselves the targets of something that we really can control, which is the monitoring of the system and developing processes to improve what's happening in the system, rather than setting the system targets for the department. In terms of the other targets that were not achieved, there were 2 others. The one specifically highlighted here is around the number of universities which do not have the 5 ministerial appointees indicated in their statutes. The minister has made an appeal to all universities that in terms of the Higher Education Act, he was entitled to appoint 5 ministerial appointees to each of the universities. And he had requested that all universities comply with the Higher Education Act. However, we were working through a collegial process of discussing this with universities, and only 17 of the 25 universities have complied with that process by the end of the financial year. The issue then is on in terms of how we will mitigate to get around that, because the Higher Education Act is clear. The minister did meet with the University of Chairs Forum, and he explained to them why he would want to have 5 ministerial appointees on each council, and this matter has now been taken forward, and there's general agreement that institutions will go back and look at their statutes in relation to this request. I think that takes us to the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, can we take participation from members? No. Yes, other Carson, number 1. Bozoli, number 2. Mbasa, number 3. Suela, number 4. Kekana, number 5.
Thank you. I just want to make one or two comments now and ask a few questions, particularly as they relate to the first-time enrollments as well as the honors graduates in terms of the targets that were not met previously. And then there was the comments that were made in terms of how the target setting should be set going forward in terms of monitoring. I want to start off by making a comment to say I don't think I would support that, and I think the department should think about that more closely. If we are going to then try to say, because understandably you cannot control every part or every constraint within the system, but if we just set in targets of monitoring, who then has the greatest influence on the system is the question that we need to ask ourselves, because I don't think that institutions themselves have influence on the different variables within the system or the different cogs within the system where they themselves can then say, well, let us look at how do we achieve this target in it by ourselves. I still believe that the department itself, together with the minister, are able to better influence the system as a whole in order to ensure that the conditions are there for the targets to be met. And I'll give an example. If it's an issue of access for first-time entries, we're dealing with different public entities such as NASPAS that obviously influence on the university education branch and the system and the way that those interact. So I don't believe that the manner of target setting should be changed, because it's then abdicating responsibility that nobody else is better placed to really own that responsibility. But I want to ask a couple of questions, particularly on the first-time enrollments and particularly on the honors, because when I look at the strategies to deal with the underperformance, it does speak about doing more research, and it does speak about citing that the type of funding or insufficient funds could be a factor. I want to ask, what are the trends since 2012? Because that would be a little bit more telling. What are the trends since 2012, and how does it link to funding in particular? And how has, over the last year, particularly when we're looking at your first-time enrollments, within the pilot institutions for NASFAS, so, for example, your NMMU, your... And the other institutions that are on the pilot for NASPAS, is there any trend to say that the first-time enrollment linked to those students that have been funded, are there less students that are being enrolled in that regard, anything that has been picked up at the department, because I would expect that the department monitors these things on a continuous basis. And similarly to honors students that are not being funded to honors, it was something that I had raised previously when we were doing the performance plans, on the funding of honors students where there is no research component to that honors. What is the link over the last year, and what are the plans from the department to ensure that there is access for poor students in particular to honors and VTech degrees, also considering that there isn't much funding, but what are the plans? If there's no plan, then what are the targets? Or are we then just leaving it up to the market to say, well, if there are those that can afford, universities must make the space, and then those must then be able to take their place within that.
Number two, but please don't make your question longer than the actual presentation. Number two, please.
Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry, I've also got a few questions, but I'll try and make it quick. First of all, one of the things I noticed about this department, and it's not just the university division, is that there are a lot of planned documents, task teams, initiatives, policy documents coming out. But we not all of them seem to be going anywhere. So that's one thing. Too many plans, maybe, and not enough time or money to enact the results of all of those plans. That's a general comment. The second one is, it seems to me that the department is reaching its limits. Much as, you know, in Marxist theory, capitalism reaches a certain limit when the cost of production reach a certain level and it can't pursue any further without radically changing the nature of production. The department has reached its limits because the cost of expanding student numbers basically rests with NSFAS. You can't expand student numbers forever. So it says in your report, we didn't meet the target because there wasn't enough NSFAS money. So you've actually reached your limits of expansion. And it's no good just putting bigger and bigger expansion targets in every year. Those limits are going to get worse as time goes on, especially because now you're giving NSFAS to FET colleges as well. So I think that needs to be seriously addressed by the department. Then second point is, what has happened to the Transformation Committee? Of all the various committees, task teams, blah, 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 this one seems to have disappeared from the radar. Third one, the review of the Higher Education Act, what is it for and when is it due to be finished and who is doing it? Next one, you very proudly say that your teacher education student numbers have gone up, very nice, but we hear from schools where some of those student teachers are being placed that the reason why student teacher numbers are going up is because the quality of admissions levels is going down. And that Funza Lushaka bursaries are being given to students who have not been properly screened for their capacity to teach. And if that is the case, I think that is a matter for serious concern. Then your interpretation of improving research. Now, improving research, according to your interpretation, is producing more MA and PhD students and academics producing more articles. That's not my interpretation of improving research. That's my interpretation of gearing up the student numbers and putting academics into a sort of production line where they have to produce more and more articles, but without the kind of basis for the improvement of research. And very few of the infrastructure grants have been for research infrastructure improvement. So I would really suggest that when we come to looking at the new targets, that they be modified and expanded and qualitatively changed so that your ideas about improving research become more nuanced. And then I fully agree with Mr. Kassin that it wouldn't be much good changing the targets so that, in a way, you weren't as dependent on other institutions for meeting the targets. But I would support an idea of
dividing your targets into those that can be met by the department and those that are dependent upon other institutions. For us, that would be great. We would then have, in a way, three categories of targets. Targets fully met, targets that couldn't be met, A, dependence on other institutions, and B, our own fault, as it were. Because we understand the dependence on other institutions being a problem. But I still think those targets need to be there. And as you say, with the one target, when it's not met as a result of the institution, like the honor student, you go to the institutions and try and work out what the problem is. Now, if you didn't have that target, you wouldn't do that. So it seems to me that might be one possibility. Thank you.
Chair, Inspector, we are now on program 3, and questions have been asked. We continue with number 3. We've got 5 people all together. You can take over the after.
Thank you, Whip. I will now call upon Mr. Mbata to come in.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I have 2 questions. One is a political question, and then the other one is directly in line with your presentation. Maybe let me start with the political question. Honorable Chair, I think this is the only term of government when you will only be able to have one shot to really project in the next 10 years what are the real numbers of young South Africans who are interested in higher education and who will be even towards 2030, because 2030 between now and today, or between now and 2030 is actually about 16 or something. Because for me, I am worried that we're not projecting in line with the needs of our people. I think we're projecting in line with the needs of the fiscal, and in fact we're regulating exclusion. Thirdly, the issue about female numbers. Dr. Carter, if you walk around registration periods, things have changed. Whether you are in a TVET college or you are in a university or you are in a university of technology, the lines have changed. There is more people wearing trousers in those queues than people wearing skirts. Never mind the dimension that trousers now belongs to all. But the reality of those trousers is that it's our young ladies. They earn for a better life. And I think one of the biggest shortcomings is that even at reception points, knowing the conditions they go through, we still find that we're not able to accommodate all of them across all, whether it is TVET, it is universities of technology, or primary universities. So I will prefer, as I said earlier in my statement, you are the only term that has got one shot to do this right. Because if this term gets it wrong, it implies that whatever that you say about 2030 is just saving money at the expense of a black child. Because NSFAS, with all said, it's not going to help. In fact, NSFAS can never be part of your package with the history that we're coming from. And so is the exclusion. You are going to be excluding a black child by byproduct of your own actions without necessarily having a policy to exclude the black child. Meaning, certain actions are going to affect them more than your policy. That is the truth.
Remember to round up.
Let me take a break. I will not ask the other question.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. The department reports here that they did not meet the target, their enrollment targets, partly because of shortfall in funding, and that has to do with NSFAS. Now, since the department couldn't meet their target, are they considering increasing NSFAS funding in future so that they are able to meet the set targets? And we have seen a spate of protests throughout the country by students with regard to shortage of funding in the institution. I just want to know whether the department is considering increasing NSFAS funding. Now, the second question relates to the fact that the department or the minister could not enforce the set target that the universities must have 5 ministerial appointees, and some have complied and others are yet to comply, if they will ever comply with that particular requirement. Since the minister cannot force the universities to do that, would it be worse for the department to continue this indicator in future? Because if you don't have the power to force people, why do you set a target that you cannot necessarily enforce? Or should it be better to change the statutes, the laws, that would make sure that the minister has the power to actually force the university to do the same? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, mine is also on females. Why do you sound skeptic when you say you have overproduced as regards the target when it comes to females? My sentiments are different. I'm actually excited if that is the case. I mean, women are said to be in the majority. And because when it comes to the brand of poverty, these are the people who feel it more than anybody, because hungry children will pull mommy's dress, not daddy's trousers. And they are very close to the kids who are hungry, and if they can be empowered to be independent, because that traditional dependence is pure love, not sending them to school, so that they can depend on men. If it fades away, the brain drainage that was there throughout Africa, because we're not educated, very brilliant in many senses, people, is going away. So this is a big achievement, actually. I'm surprised that you sound, I don't know, very, very hesitant about doing the right thing. What do you mean we must analyze why we overproduce in women, as if we're doing the wrong thing? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. mine is just a clarification. At the strikes at the universities by students is disturbing, and it interferes with the learning of students. But I just want to know whether the strike is because of the students who were funded, but now they find themselves in the limbo because they are no longer funded because of the shortage of money, or are the new ones who want to enter the sponsorship and not getting what they are asking for? Thank you, Chair.
Through you,
yeah, no, thank you very much, Chair. I think in regard to the first question, it is correct to emphasize that as a department we have to set a target informed by the needs of the country, after which we have to work out as to what are the mechanisms of achieving those targets within the system as a whole. And where an intervention, either in terms of policy, legislation, or any other form of mechanism, has to be informed by the nature of a particular challenge at a given point in time. Therefore, we're talking for the system. We're not only looking at targets that are actually is or comfortable to achieve, because this is a system which is serving the entire country. That's the responsibility that we have, and we're not going to abdicate that responsibility at any given point in time. I want to assure the members of the committee in regards to that question. And at no stage are we going to review targets to suit a nice thing to do. We are going to work out targets that are going to take this country forward in the entire system. I thought it's important to clarify that, that point, so that we are not ambiguous about it at all. Now, a lot of plans, documents, what have you, I suppose a system like the one we are in charge of cannot be driven and directed quite adequately through common sense. It requires well-researched policies, regulations, plans, and in doing so, you have to tap into the knowledge and the expertise of all South Africans. It could be in the form of a task team. It could be in the form of a commission. It can take any form, because what you have to do in so far as investing money has to be informed with scientific and empirical evidence, so that we are able to intervene quite correctly and quite precisely. The question of NESFA, I don't think it's correct to say that as a country we have reached the limit. No, we're not. In as much as there are challenges that are varying, what we do, the minister will issue a ministerial statement which is negotiated with the institutions around the set of targets, as well as what would that cost the country and what are the funding mechanisms and options that are there in their totality. Yes, there is substantial funding from the fiscal. But our institutions have got a leverage as well of tax stream income. That's a fact. And some have over time built reserves. And also there are also other forms of funding into the system, both from the public as well as the private sector. And in the ministerial statement, I think for 2012, what we have actually achieved in terms of the target, it was 169,265, and we achieved that.
how is it going to evolve over time, and what are the cost implications about it? We're assembling a team of capable South Africans to work with us in developing that plan, because we don't want this white paper to be just a document lying in there, not being implemented, and its goals not realized. As much as we understand that the economic situation is not quite favorable at the present moment, there are certain constraints, but you are parliamentarians. You are here for that. We'll want money from you. You will vote it for us. And if you don't vote it for us, we won't have it. But if you do vote for it for us, we'll be able to carry the mandate that you have entrusted us with. So there is that collaboration which is quite important in enabling us to take forward all the commitments that are actually articulated on this front. Yeah, I think the question of strikes, there are quite a number of contributing factors. At times, it would be talking amongst student organizations. SRC elections, you know, if you elect me, this is what I'll do. That's what youth can attest to. And that competition at times, it really leads into showing it up. I can shake the management. But those are the things that we need to manage. The second area is the one that I spoke to, that there are a lot of cheating instances in the system, where in actual fact, students who are coming from relatively well-off families are actually helping themselves in this. In this NSFAS money, whilst it's not supposed to be happening. The inefficiencies at institutional level, that's another area. So we are investigating all those areas with a view of coming up with a better response. I think we are done with the terms of reference for the forensic investigation. It will be up and running before the end of the month. Guy will take up a few other issues.
Thank you. I think maybe just to emphasize the DG's focus on the enrollment planning process and the setting of targets. And you'll see in our new strategic plan what we've done is we've taken all those system targets, and they are in the plan as system targets. And that's specifically what we have to monitor and keep our institutions to in terms of those targets. How we steer the system then is directly related to the various processes that we have in place, the various policies and the regulations that need to be monitored, and then obviously steering through the funding mechanisms. And those issues are issues that we are taking forward with our institutions. When you talked about the honours graduates, this issue is of concern to us because it's the key pipeline to postgraduate focuses. And we've done some work on that linked to our new process around staffing South African universities to understand what it is and what it will take to retain people at that particular level. And linked to that is the whole issue of the development of pipeline scholars and trying to lever the system to get funding for scholarships for those for people at that level. Professor Bazzoli, perhaps just to indicate, in relation to the review of the Higher Education Act, we are currently in the process of that review. The review team includes the Department of Higher Education and Training, the Council on Higher Education South Africa, and the University of Chairs, Council Chairs Forum. We are looking at the entire Act as has been indicated in the White Paper,
to look for issues of inconsistencies where there may have been changes previously, to look for gaps, to deal with all the issues linked to the transitionary arrangements that were not finalized and so on. And we're at the point now where we've got a full, we've done that work in terms of looking across the entire Act, and we've got a full draft that will be consulted further with the system. In terms of the teacher education numbers, I think it's really important to take ourselves back to about 2007, when we were producing around 6,000 new teachers for the system, but the system required 18,000 to 20,000 teachers per annum. And we had to put in processes, in place processes to do two things. One, increase the numbers, and two, increase the quality in relation to the program. And so we've been working on both of those sides. The quality issue is a major issue for us in relation to the change in curriculum, which is why we've implemented the new policy on minimum requirements for teacher education, where we're looking specifically at how we understand knowledge and practice for teachers. So I think from that perspective, we're working very closely with DBE. The Fonzo Lashasa program is DBE's program, and we do work hand in hand with them in terms of creating processes for attracting young people. Our institutions are telling us that we are getting quite good quality students coming into teacher education, so we need to, and currently there is a process of evaluation going on through the DBE on the Fonzo Lashasa program. In terms of improving research, I think this issue we work very closely with DST on, and the NRS as well. And so it's also an issue of both qualitative and quantitative targets. We have to focus on quantitative targets as well, because we need to see how we can increase the research productivity. But the quality issue is also very important. Currently, we have a program where we're working with the DST and ASAS to look at the quality of journals that are being approved and to streamline those processes. The new policy on measurement of research outputs should be published quite soon, and that will help us around, because the focus of the changes is on the issue of quality. In terms of the issue of the female students in the system, we're very happy that we have a strong female representative in the system. But what we've recognized in looking at this is that we are creeping up to 60% of our students in the system being female. Now, what does this mean? It means that only around 40% of our students are male. But if we look at the population as a whole, we can see that that's skewed. We need to take care of all of our students, female and male students. And in this country particularly, the disaffected youth, particularly male youth, are a concern, and we need to deal with those issues. So we have to keep a balance in terms of the targets going forward. It's something that we have requested research on, because we've seen the participation of male students is not increasing at the same rate as participation of female students in the system. In terms of the first-time entry students, I think the DG did cover that issue quite well in terms of enrollment planning. The issue of the five ministerial appointees, the minister does have the power, because the Higher Education Act indicates that the minister may appoint five appointees to any council. Councils, however, do their own statutes. And so initially, it was around just requesting councils to change their statutes to that point in a collegial manner. Going forward, the minister we'll be looking at requesting every council to change it to come in line with the Higher Education Act. But it is one of those issues that in the system that we'll have to deal with. The last one, I think the DG covered as well, which was around the strikes. That's it. Thank you very much.
Questions, and it won't be long. The first one, I want to go back to the honors students, and not just honors, I want to speak about VTEC as well, because I don't think it's just honors students that are for students to access postgraduate studies. There's your VTEC students, those that have done a diploma that want to access postgraduate students studies that will need to do a VTEC. I don't think and Dr. Bakker, I want you to please give me a straight answer. Is there a plan for those students that want to study that cannot afford it? Is there a plan? Is it for next year? Is it for the following year? Or are we still trying to research whether there will be a plan? Because there are students as we speak that want to study, that want to increase those numbers, but they do not know how they will be able to study. And this is something that will need to be communicated with those students, because they will be increasingly frustrated as we move towards January, as we move towards the registration, because it's either they must find a job or it's either they want to be able to continue their studies. So we know the policy of NSFAS is only to fund the first degree, and that's fine, that's NSFAS and that's its own public entity. I'm saying from the department, what's the plan? And if there's no plan, then we need to face up to that, or is it just for those that can afford? Secondly, Doc, you spoke about Kunga Lusaka and access for those that will be doing teacher education. There's been reports recently on those that are applying, and I know this is not particularly a bursary that comes from this department, but it is being administered by NSFAS, which is one of its public entities. There's been reports of those that are applying for this bursary but are being rejected on the grounds, and I'm not sure whether or not this is a change in the Department of Education's regulations or is it wrongful implementation at institutions, but being rejected on the grounds that they have not done an African language at school. And defined to them as an African language is anything outside of English and Afrikaans. So I just wanted to get some guidance on this. Has the department picked up any of this, or is public entity any of this on the ground? But it's something that I myself have picked up with a number of queries as to when did such a change happen, and if not, why is it being implemented differently, or why are they getting this kind of communication? I do have the letters as well that have been sent out with this as well. So I just want some sort of clarity around that.
Yeah, I've actually forgotten what my follow-up question was.
Chair, even though it's not covered in the presentation, I just want to know, for instance, with the year and the review, what are those black or previously black universities that did receive any research grant? In detail, also in amounts, if you have that information.
Thank you very much. In terms of the BTEC funding, there is funding through the Scarce Skills Fund for BTEC students who require that qualification for professional registration, which is quite a large number of the BTECs. And that funding is available and managed through NSFAS. Not all BTEC qualifications are covered by that. And the kinds of qualifications that aren't covered like that are, for example, the BTECs in business administration and so on. In terms of the honours program, DST does have a set of some scholarships for honours students, but this is a big gap in the system, and it's a gap that we have recognised together with DST. Currently, there is a small amount of funding for honours students. It's not a large amount of funding. And we don't currently have additional funding to support that from the DHET's perspective. However, we are working towards the pipeline identifying strong honours students that can have the potential to become academics in the system for strengthening the academic system. And then we also have the NSF bursaries that are available to those students that are managed through the system, particularly in the scarce skills area. The teacher education Funza Lushaka issue, I'm not aware of that. I haven't been informed of that change, if there is such a change, and we can certainly follow up on that. And if you could provide us with that information, we'd be happy, because we will be meeting with the National Teacher Development Committee towards the end of the month, and we can find out more about it at that point in time. In terms of the previously disadvantaged institutions, I think I'm not sure if you could just give clarification on what the issue is.
Through you, Chair. Under normal circumstances, the department supervises the application or the request from various universities for research grants. It may be through your own system or through your sister division, which is the NRF. My question, therefore, is among all the students, which ones who applied were black, and which ones were given, and what were the attributable amounts?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think that information can actually be made available in its breakdown, later. So it's going to be sent to the portfolio committee members. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay.
By tomorrow you'll have a check by tomorrow. Thank you. The next presentation is the program 4.
Now, once more, good morning to honorable members and the colleagues. Program 4 represents vocational and continuing education and training. The purpose of the program is to plan, develop, evaluate, monitor, and maintain national policy programs and systems for the vocational and continuing education and training, including further education and training colleges, which will soon be popularizing the new nomenclature of technical vocational education and training, as well as post-literacy adult education. Now, the performance of the branch, you know, is as reflected on the slide. Now, I think it's opportune, Honourable Chairperson and members, to mention on the onset that some of the targets which were not attained by the end of the financial year have since been achieved, and I will indicate this as I go through the presentation at a later stage. It is also worth mentioning that as a branch, we undertook an exercise of introspection and self-critique, through which we sought to understand exactly what are the positive sectors for the underperformance. and so we have an understanding of, you know, where things didn't go as planned. Now, the branch registered some key achievements during the year under review. We targeted 650,000 headcount enrollment for the TVET colleges, and we exceeded the target by registering 670,455 headcount. Now, we also had a target of for the awarding of the bursary, and this was exceeded by 50,862 after we awarded bursaries to 273,679 students. Now, the branch continued to intensify capacity building for college officials with a view to increase the throughput and certification rates. And to this effect, 167 lecturers, student support services managers were trained to implement the comprehensive student support services framework. 692 lecturers were trained to support curriculum delivery. 75 provincial education department officials were trained to support the new NASCA and DETC curriculum delivery. 307 personnel in research institutions were trained to support curriculum delivery in AEs and colleges, while 256 personnel at public FET colleges were trained in financial management. This, I must indicate, that are aligned with the turnaround strategy of the sector. Now, we have put in measures to deal with underperformance in areas where targets were not achieved. Amongst others, and this is the pathway I said I will in the meantime also indicate those targets that we managed to achieve, albeit after the end of the financial year. By now, we have fully constituted TVET College Council, and this is what we had targeted to achieve by 31st March, which we couldn't. We had also planned to offer training in institutional corporate governance to the councils, but because we hadn't fully constituted the councils, we couldn't do that, but that training is currently continuing, and I think it will be completed by the end of October. Now, we had targeted to build 6 college campuses, and that remains unachieved, but we are in the process of rectifying the challenges we had in the previous round, because we were unable to secure service providers that met the requirements, and so we have had to re-advertise, and the process of procurement is underway. Now, we also had a target where we were supposed to develop, as a department, the business management system standards for implementation by the colleges. That was not achieved by the end of the financial year, but we have since managed, working with the planning branch, to develop those standards. Now, another challenge that we exceeded in terms of the unattainment of the targets was that we had planned to increase the number of colleges offering program level 5 and 6 qualifications, but we fell short of 3, you know, institutions. This the colleges do in conjunction with the universities, and the challenge there is the dependency. However, we are in the process of conversing with the university branch with a view to making this a special program through which collaboratively we can see how to improve, you know, the performance in this regard. Now, one of the areas where we have not met the target is with regards to the underperformance, you know, in relation to the certification rates of TVET qualifications. Now, several interventions are in place to address the issue.
it is our understanding that it is a progressive and not an incidental intervention, and therefore we will begin to slowly see, you know, the positive results. Now, there was a mention by my colleagues that part of the limitations in our planning was that we apportioned the impact indicators to ourselves. I think the investment branch used it as the, you know, used the terminology of the system a target. And we also suffered the same fate in respect of the training on the NASCAR and the GTCA. What happened is that we undertook the training. However, we missed the target by a small margin following the education, the educator disengagement in the province of Limpopo, which made it difficult for us to, you know, to conduct the training, but also the budget limitations, you know, expressed by the Department of Education in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. Now, we had also hoped that by the end of the financial year, we would have finalized and published the new three-year NCV qualification policy. However, we had an instance where, following the presentation of the first draft by the Ministerial Task Team on NCV, the scope had to be extended, and therefore that actually pushed the timeline. Now, that has been concluded yet, and the recommendations have been presented to the ministry. We are, at the same time, engaging with the quality councils, you know, to start the process of actually developing the qualification. Now, the certification rates of bursar recipients were also recorded as the underperformance because they are slightly below the rest of the students. Now, our initial assumption is that there is a possible non-compliance by the institution with the academic merit criteria. However, as part of the diagnostic, you know, review that we are undertaking in the branch, we are intending to interrogate possible other factors with a view to developing the targeted interventions. I think that will bring us to the end of the presentation, Honorable Chair.
Thank you for the presentation, Honorable Members. Over to you. This is your time to interrogate the presentation. How many would like to come in? Professor Pozoli, Ms. Tambata, Madam Nzadime, Mr. Kasim, and Mr. Ketane, and the last one will be Ms. Nkum. In that order.
Okay. Yes, I just want to ask more about these AET educators who were supposed to be trained but never got trained, from what I can work out, because there was some sort of industrial action or resistance on their part. Can you tell us more about what that was and how long it went on for? And then also, could you tell us about the bursary administration and management guidelines, which when we went to Vuselela College, they complained that students who live more than 10 kilometres away don't get bursaries, and this was quite a hardship for those students, and I'm just wondering whether those bursary guidelines are up for review or are they fixed in stone. Thank you.
Yeah. Honourable Chair, thanks. My first question will be on articulation. One of the problems we have sensed is that as the system grows this particular area, invariably young people will want to cross the system and maybe move from and 4 and 6 to a third year, fourth year university program. And one of the problems that will become a South African problem is that, in particular as defined by where these young people come from, meaning which TVETs, specific colleges produces them, might be declined by either universities of technologies or other primary universities. Can you work hard on this thing to a level where we will have absolute clarity that in the next 5 years the structure is not going to discriminate against these young people? This is too much a big number to be frustrated. Two, can you assure us that the certification problems that were experienced in the beginning of the term of this department are now over? And with specific, because you said you were engaged in a project to make sure that you eradicate almost everything. I think this financial year we'll have to confirm that you are really making progress. Can you tell us about that?
Thank you, Chairperson. My question will be saying, previously the department reported that the cabinet has approved procurement of an external IT system that will be dealing with the certification. I just want to check how far is that process. And my second question relates to the TVET College of Vuselela. During our visit, we got a report that there is a risk on one of the residents whereby the female students have been raped at some stage. And then I want to check whether the department has already made some intervention on that. Thank you, Chief Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to speak predominantly around the way that the bursaries are being administered at these institutions, because I think that's a very big worrying factor from the AG's report as well. Particularly around students that are receiving bursaries that should not be receiving bursaries, those that should be receiving bursaries that are not, the way that the administration is being taking place. What is being done by the department in order to correct the type of fraud that is taking place, but also the way that it is being reported and documented, which I believe from the AG's report is not reliable, is not useful. So to ensure that it's actually going to those students that are needy, those students that qualify, etc. Secondly, with regards to the regulations, because the regulations around the bursary, and it actually dates back to the beginning of this year, there were oversight visits being done to TVET colleges in the Western Cape, but also now recently it has been raised again, and the department official that was there could not give us an answer and did not really know what had been done previously or what was being done, particularly around the 10 and 40 kilometer rule. It does not relate to whether or not the person will get the bursary, but it relates to whether or not they will have transport or accommodation. And it particularly puts those students within 10 kilometers up to, and I know in places in Gauteng, in the Western Cape in particular, to risk of criminal elements, particularly our female students. But also the 80%, 20% rule, which is resulting in monies being not expended, or the fees of the institutions going up
in order to try and capitalize on the 80% ring fence for tuition fees. So, and it's been a long time. We haven't received anything from the department. I'm not sure why until now, because at that point, even though it was raised at the beginning of the year, the department official was saying, well, it's still being considered. So I'm not sure how long we're going to consider this. But if we can get some sort of way forward as to, is it, has it been considered? What are the relevant implications? Is it going to be changed? And so forth.
I just want to check with the vocational and artisans. You know, when it is universities, the statistics that you give us as to how many we are producing per university, I mean, they are quite visible. You meet these graduates, you can see them. But with vocation, technical and vocational, we know we are increasing in terms of steps. The data that is there, but why is it that you're not actually feeling the effect of this in day-to-day life? You know, I wish we really could. We used to in the past, we knew guys who felt themselves vocational, we had electricians, plumbers, and you could even call them to come and do piping at home. But now recently, that's on artisans. That impact, I wonder why we're not feeling it. Do you have an idea? As much as we can feel matriculant finishing, as much as we really can see visible university graduates. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, what is on one of the targets that were not met with regards to the building of TVET colleges, TVET college campuses. Initially, the target was 6, but the President in the SONA of 2014 announced that the department's priority for 2014-2015 financial year was to build 12. TVET college campuses. My question is, will the department be able to build the 12 TVET college campuses given that this target was previously not achieved? That's the first one. The second question is with regards to the constitution of councils. You reported that some of the councils have been constituted. I'm interested in numbers, just in terms of figures, how many councils and institutions where councils are fully functional, because this speaks to the running of the institution, the audit committee, and all this. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the questions. I will start with the question by the professor, the honourable member. You know, with respect to the details of the educator disengagement, it was around the conditions of service. The situation is that it's such that in Limpopo, the AED educators are appointed as contract workers. They don't have permanent contracts, and they are paid hourly rates. And this is what they were dissatisfied about. Now, the dynamics around this issue is that adult education and training remains a concurrent function between the provincial education department and the Department of Higher Education, to such an extent that it is actually Program 6, which doesn't feature, you know, as far as we're concerned. And therefore, the budget allocation from voted funds goes to the province and not to ourselves. And therefore, it becomes difficult.
to control that. Now, the other question is about whether the bursary guidelines are under review. The question is yes. However, after considering all the inputs and the experiences we've had in implementing them, the department has decided for now to retain the condition of the 10-kilometer radius. Part of it is related to affordability, but also that was guided by some research that indicated that, you know, the transport cost, you know, within the 10-kilometer radius, you know, could be affordable to students. So the guidelines under review, but this one seems, you know, to be staying in terms of the decision that we're making. We will, I think, after the, because we implemented this for the first time this year, but it might be so that after we implement again this year, maybe other trends will emerge that may necessitate, you know, the relook into that condition. Now, there was also a question, or maybe a statement, although I see the Honourable Member is out, a statement about the need to improve articulation between all the subsystems, and we agree with that input, and in fact, the white paper places the issue of articulation, you know, central, you know, to the activities of the whole system, and so we take, you know, the point. Now, the certification problems have largely been eradicated. However, we struggle along because the reasons that were provided previously, that we are dependent on CITA as the service provider, remains the same. However, we have found a way of working closely with themselves and Umalusi to make sure that we make some progress. So the biggest backlog has been eradicated, and we are basically, you know, certificated now according to the policy within the 4 months and so on, while at the same time we have a parallel process of finalizing the backlog. Now, on the question of the procurement of the exam system, again, that process is continuing. It has not been procured already, but again, we're working with the CITA to make sure that that is finally procured, but the processes are continuing. Now, the security concerns around Vuselela. We actually have looked at all the challenges, you know, prior to the visit by the portfolio committee to Vuselela. We had already identified it as one of the institutions requiring dedicated support, and therefore we already had teams working there. Now, subsequent to the visit and when the issues were raised through a report by the officials that participated in that oversight visit, we then have come together, because between myself and VDG Corporate Services, we realize that most of the challenges afflicting the college actually are either HR, labor relations, you know, financial, and the structural, and therefore that cuts across the two branches. We are working together to resolve some of the issues. As we're talking now, we've got a team that is doing, that's conducting work studies to basically deal with the issue of the heavy compensation of employee costs, because that is what is actually creating a problem for the college. With regard to the campus that is located next to the mining area, I believe this is what the Honourable Member is talking about, and therefore being vandalized. We have decided also, working together with the VDG Corporate, to say it is better to have a holistic approach where we are identifying, you know, officials of the department to work together with the college and the provincial officials in the Northwest to have a task team that will actually deal with all the issues, including the security at the camp, that particular campus. So that we are putting in place. Now, interventions to curb corruption in the distribution of NSF, I think the DG responded to this after the presentation by the investor branch, to say there will be an investigation undertaken. Now, there was also a question more like aligned to the review of the 10-kilometer radius. I think I've responded to that, but there's also Now the one about the 80%, 20% rule, you know, that the Honourable Member indicates that needs a review. Currently it remains, but we take the input that maybe it's something that needs to be looked at in the future. However, what necessitated the distribution is that the cost of provision is actually very high in technical and vocational institutions, and therefore this is why you have the segmentation, you know, within the percentages that we have put it. That is something that will look, you know, again going forward. Now, Honorable Pekana, you indicate that you don't feel the impact of the production of middle-level skills. The general remark I want to make is that the TVET sector must be viewed in the context of a sector in constant change. First of all, it is a conglomerate of the former technical colleges, which were brought together in 2002, and that makes it the youngest subsystem within the whole education system, the higher education system. Now, what that did then was that it necessitated a relook into, you know, the programs that are being offered and so on and so forth. However, we have had a number of students graduating, you know, with those middle-level skills. You're talking plumbers, you're talking bricklayers and so on. Because in addition to the ministerial approved program, later than MCD, the colleges are offering occupationally directed programs, which is what you're talking about. So it might be so that you have not quite felt the impact, but we are progressively producing, you know, those middle level skills. The 12 campuses, as I indicated during the presentation, the procurement process is on, and the DG will, you know, give further details. How many college councils have been constituted? All colleges have fully constituted councils, and they have started functioning. It is so that in some instances, you will have vacancies of members, you know, changing their mind in terms of accepting the appointment and so on, but legally, fully constituted councils are in place.
Okay. No, thanks. This question of bursary and the management guidelines, I think it requires just a brief elaboration. One is that the colleges are established in a form and pattern which is different from the establishment of universities, and they don't serve the same purpose. For colleges, we are informed by a need of proximity to community where these colleges should actually be located. That is why we have undertaken a study and an investigation of the spread of colleges or post-school education and training institutions. We do mapping for the entire country. And what we came across was that mainly post-school education and training facilities are concentrated in urban areas. There are areas in rural areas where you have to travel a distance of about 350 kilometers without coming across any post-school education and training facility. Hence then, the establishment of the two new universities, as well as the campuses of TVET colleges, are looking at closing those gaps in the first instance. Now, if the colleges are built or established to be close to communities, what then should be the funding mechanisms that are therein? In 2010, I think NSFAS was allocating around 230-something thousand rand for bursaries in TVET colleges. In 2012, that increased to 1.2 billion. 2013, 1.98 billion. 2014 is around 2.1 billion. Now, we then engaged with the colleges in looking as to how this money could actually be utilized and where are the problem areas. A research we conducted, which informed the development of this policy, was the students in TVET colleges, if they could be afforded at least two things. One, covering full cost of study, paying full tuition fees. Then, in some instances, there would be challenges in regard to the question of access and how do we deal with that. We came then to a conclusion that at least if a college does have some funds that are available, perhaps within a radius of from 10 to 40, we could consider assisting with transport somehow. It may not be fully. We may meet a college may meet a student, you know, half or what have you, because the financial muscle of college is not the same. But beyond 40 kilometers, it becomes too costly to transport. It's better then to look for an accommodation closer to a campus of a college. So that is the approach, and it's informed by that thinking and by those outcomes of research. In the first instance, it's proximity. We're falling short to see how we can actually assist. But tuition and fees, full cost. I think it clarifies the matter. On articulation, honorable members may recall that there's a government gazette which was published, I think it was on the 27th of June 2014, for public comment. The closing date was on the 28th of August 2014. Now we're analyzing the comments on articulation, because we want to make this a policy matter quite very soon. But in the interim, we have engaged with our institutions, including universities through HISA, for ease of access and articulation, even though there's still a policy gap in the entire system. And quite a number of universities have responded quite positively in that regard, as a matter of practice, you know, currently. On certification, our records reveal that it's 13,218 that still has to be certified. So hope certificates are going to be issued in that regard quite very soon. So 304,776 certificates have been issued, you know, already. But we are lagging behind by that figure. That then is what has prompted us to actually work with CETA towards the procurement of a specific customized IT system for the management of the examinations. Our target is the 30th of November. I think I'll be getting the feedback as to how far that process is. We are working through CETA processes, State Information Technology Agency, for procurement. Now, this question of security is not a matter which is affecting Vuselela alone. Members would recall that we have been working quite very hard since the beginning of this year, when this was brought to our attention by various colleges. But the approach of colleges was that, therefore, to address this matter, then the transport can be a resolution. So our view as a department was that this is a security matter. We have to work on it in collaboration with communities as well as police to combat crime in society. We are approaching it in that fashion, and there have been discussions between us and SARS in addressing all these pertinent areas, because in the main, the provision of security is SARS' responsibility. We do play our part, but we are just ordinary civilians, you know, citizens. We can do so much, but we fall short in some other areas. Hence, we are taking up this matter with them as well. The question of fraudulent practices, Honorable Kassim, in TVET colleges. There are quite a number of interventions here. One, what informed our partnership with SAICA was around these areas, and subsequently the engagement by the minister with the AG to also get into the system. And further on, one of the things then we started to do with a view of trying to intervene quite decisively on this matter was to develop a circular which is identifying quite a number of areas that are flawed in the system of TVET colleges, where we have actually put to the attention of the colleges all the areas that we are highly concerned about and what we think should actually happen. But over and above identifying all these areas, we are putting to colleges to work out action plans on governance. What action plans are we looking at in terms of HR? What action plans? In terms of financial controls, what action plan? It's quite detailed. And fortunately, there are some copies here which will be distributed to the members of the committee as we speak. I requested for the copies to be made so that they can be distributed as to what are we looking at doing. But over and above that, we are working now. We are still going to test this with the AG is the monitoring and evaluation mechanisms on the implementation of the prescripts of that regulation, which is looking at improving the financial control environment at our colleges. It's a huge task, but we think we're equal to the task. The Honorable Kagana is raising this matter quite very well. I think the minister is on record here on making colleges to be institutions of choice, not a second or third guess by the citizens. One of the things that are underpinning our strategy in developing and actually improving the performance of colleges to be colleges of choice, one, it's well-integrated learning. The second area is to ensure that all TVET college graduates, they get at least a minimum of 1 year work placement after graduating, so that it's able to complement and project to the public the usefulness of colleges, especially in the production of technicians, technologies, as well as artisans, beyond just being a theoretical thing, including then the career guidance campaign that we are involved in. There are quite a number of interventions in this regard. We realize that, of course, we've got deficit, but there are quite a number of measures that we have put in place in addressing this matter. The building of colleges, the campuses, you know, the project is on course. The first round, procurement was done for all 12 sites, including two that for refurbishment, etc., and the other two we identified in the process. For the, in total, they are 16, not just the 12. But initially, we actually looked at the at 12. The processes were undertaken, and recommended appointments were actually made, after which due diligence was undertaken. Out of that process of due diligence, it came out that it's only three companies that have the capacity to provide that service, and the rest fell off the way, and we had to restart the process afresh. We would be concluding that process, I think, by the end of December, if things go according to plan. By January, things would actually be cleared. But it's only those incapacity areas that were identified. In regard to the constitution of councils, yes, all of them were constituted. But over and above that, there is a training program which is currently unfolding. To date, it's 27 councils that have gone under through that training. I think by tomorrow we'll be at 35, because the plan is going out. Because we thought just constituting the councils and leave them and see what they do has actually undercut us. So what we need to do is to train them, including giving them a training manual that we have developed in the process. And I requested that training manual should be made available to the members of the committee, because it's an exercise we want to do yearly. So in looking at it, you may come up with some ideas that, no, it has to be improved here, there, or it's perfect. We should continue training on it. I think the copies would be available by tomorrow. We've made that arrangement. If not, at least we'll try by the end of the week that each and every member of the committee gets at least one copy. If you need more, they will be made available. But one copy is going to be made available of that training manual. Thanks, Chair.
Further documents, I propose that you send them through the secretary. By the end of the day tomorrow, because on Friday we really want to come up with the first draft of our report. And so we'll appreciate it. Alright, I see there are no follow up questions, and I'm looking at the time. It does look like we're running out of time. I know that there are still more questions to be asked, but we will then. Yeah, I think we. Let's what we have. Okay, I can see this member coming up, but we need to be satisfied with what we have. And if, for instance, honourable members, there are other questions, pressing questions that you want responses from the department, please submit those in the form of written questions to the minister. That's another way of getting responses. And then I know written responses, then they will give us in writing. They'll respond in writing. And we will appreciate. All right, Mr. Mbata? Yes, I think I'll give you one more chance for one question, and then we close this one so that you can move on to the next presentation.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the moment. Thank you very much. My question to the DJ. I love your response, DJ, on articulation. But your response to me is very political. It's high level. It can only be understood by a very progressive-minded person. The reality of the situation in South Africa is that we need to speed up articulation, because it's not only about fairness in the system, but it's also about value for money for our young people. There is a lot involved in these loans, and if a young person feels that continuing with a career direction at this level of the loan, which will not create much impact in his or her life, and a young person decide to redirect, in fact we should encourage that, but the system has to be positive about that. And currently there is not only resistance, but also there is political blackmail, the thesis is about there are always the same issue about whether when you leave University of Zululand with a third year agriculture, can you, having passed, now going to fourth year, can you immediately be accepted in Pietermaritzburg at the University of KwaZulu-Natal? But it's bigger than this example, because it's questions of perceptions, questions of inferiority, questions of heightened racism against a specific generation of young people. That is where my problem is. So I think your team should be able to really knock the vice principals of these universities, that there has to be a way to ground our system to a level where it creates fairness, it creates equity across systems, and that it remains fair to the beneficiaries. That's my point.
No, thanks, sir. I think let me clarify this issue. Initially, students with NECC were not accepted at our institutions. That has changed through our intervention. Secondly, there are programs that are being designed between universities and colleges in regard to offering of certain certificates. Programmatically, that is happening. We are saying we're not stopping there. Let us create a regulatory framework which is going to ensure that there is consistency in the entire system, of which that is articulated through the policy we've gazetted. And I think what can perhaps assist is for that policy to be distributed as well, because the closing date was on the 28th of August. We are analyzing comments now in order to put the policy into practice through approval by the minister. That's where we are at the present moment. We are not sitting back on this matter or even waiting for the policy to come into fruition. There are concrete programs currently that are taking place between universities, colleges, and the entire system. Thank you.
Okay, and then the TVET, I just want to reflect on the audit outcomes of TVET. Well, the report tells it that there's lack of record management, daily and monthly controls in 10 of your entities. There are no appropriate risk management activities developed and implemented in 13 colleges. There's lack of adequately resourced and functioning internal audit units, without this. There's a high risk in 11 of your FT colleges. Lack of adequately skilled finance units, adequately skilled. And then the audit action plans that include timelines and responsibilities of actions are not developed and implemented. They found this with 7 colleges. Now, what we're saying, I know you said you're going to develop your own action plan, but because your responsibility is monitoring and evaluation of these colleges, what we would like to see you doing is intensification of monitoring of these colleges so that there can be a turnaround in all these issues that have been raised by the Auditor General's office. I think that, I don't want a response. I thought maybe I should just reflect on that one. The serious non-compliance with the FCC Act, so your monitoring should also look at that. The supply chain management is really wanting. The regular procurement processes that are reported, and procurement committees are not in place. So, I mean, how do you deal with corruption if you don't get this right, corrected? So, I see your plan, but they must have plans, and they must submit those plans to turn around. Yours is to monitor that all this happens. On the ICT governance and control, 11 need serious intervention. That's the report, because then they don't have your IT security policy, disaster recovery plans, and I mean, if you don't do that, today it's about IT. So if they don't have all this, then obviously these colleges will collapse, and we don't want them to collapse during our term. Maybe when we are gone, but not now. Not now, please. You have to help us and make sure that they don't collapse. Because this government is talking today about a radical change. Therefore, we cannot afford to have some of the services collapsing. Instead, we need to backtrack and accelerate and improve these services so that we can benefit in terms of the radical of socio-economic transformation of the country. Thank you very much. I think let's then move on to the next presentation, which is skills development. And I know we left, let me just sensitize the honorable members and the DG and his team on the time. We are now at quarter past 12. I think we should be able to be done by 1:30. Is it something practical? I'm sure we can do it. Please, honorable members, can you assist me on this one? 1:30? Can we be done by 1:30? So that we can allow the other committee to come in and do the same work that we're doing now. All right. Thank you very much. Over to you, DG.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, we highly appreciate this national honor of presenting this part of the skills development in terms of the annual reporting. In the first slide, the purpose is to promote and monitor the national skills development strategy. Then you see the targets in total were 13. We narrowly missed it by 3 targets in terms of meeting our target there. We move to the next slide, which is slide number 26, key achievements. 27,670 artisan candidates entering learning nationally. So that target was exceeded by 1.670. 18,110 artisan candidates found competent nationally. Also, that target was exceeded by 6,110. 27,346 graduates received work integrated learning. Also, that target was exceeded by 67. All CITAS have at least 4 partnership agreements with public TVET colleges as well as universities. Also, that target was excessively met. All CITAS implement NSDS 3 with approved service level agreements and reports produced. Also, I can highly attest that that target was also met. Then we can go to slide number 27, dealing with the areas that we could not meet for the year that is under review. 48% of national artisan learners passed trade tests by 2013-2014. That target we could not meet. I can mention that everyone who's accessing our trade test system, they either come in terms of provision, Section 28 of the then MTA, that is Manpower Training Act, or else Section 13 of that particular Act. So what happens in terms of these provisions? The first one is there is no contract, meaning is therefore a person is not coming from the employer through the apprentice. Informal one, it will be a person who's coming, let's say he or she is having some experience with regard to that particular trade. And we have since then discovered that in the main, those who are failing are those who have come through under Section 28. And we have already put systems in place to assist those ones in terms of the RPL. And I can mention as well that in December, we're already planning a conference. We call it the Trade Test Path Rate Improvement Conference. That we are doing that in partnership with Mercita as well as University of Bremen, that is from Germany. The next one, secure trade testing system developed and implemented at all trade test centers. Also, that one we could not meet because the local standing for systems development is with the CETA. And then I can also attest in saying that since then, we've already developed, working with the CETA ICT systems. We will therefore be ready to implement a DICE pilot by 1st April 2015. The last one deals with the staff and critical skills list compiled. And again, also attest in saying that this has since then been achieved. We have published in May a list of top 100 occupations in the country. And that's a good note, Jefferson. I am ending myself. Thanks very much.
One quick question. The department has decreased funding for training and staff development from 1.7 million in 2012-2013 to 987,000 in 2013-2014. Has this decrease contributed to poor performance of employees?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is more of a comment. I want to start off by saying I don't think society is getting bang for its buck if you look at the money that's put into CETAS, whether it's from the National Skills Fund or whether it is a transfer or what have you. It's up to 12 billion that is shared amongst the different CETAS. And if you look at the targets, and even though most of these targets have been achieved, it's very, very low. We are dealing with 20,000 here, 18,000 there, 27,000 there. And you compare it to the amount of money that's put in, for example, to put students through technical and vocational study, or put students through university study, or put students through postgraduate study. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. So my comment is to say, at this point, there needs to be a thinking as to either how do we get more for society in terms of skills training? How do we reform these targets? I think the targets need to change. I think the thinking needs to change. And I think these CETAs, at the moment, I just don't think the outcome that is being produced for society are commensurate with the amount of funds And these are societal funds, whether they come from the National Skills Funds or wherever. I don't think that it is producing the required outcomes that we need for our young people or for our people that need to be skilled for our workforce or in developing our workforce going forward. That's just my comment, teacher.
Thanks very much, Dr. Singh. Perhaps starting with the last one. We normally, what we do is that when we set targets for the next financial year, we benchmark as to what has been achieved in the previous year. And this is what exactly we have done also with regard to various learning programs. And I can make mention that, you know, we've came up with an innovation with regard to assistant development. For the first time in the history of the country, now we're having a policy with reference to learner funding and administration. That was not there before. So what we have done was that it's costing about 139,250 to train an assistant. So CTAS for the year that has ended 31st March 2014, they have committed close to 2 billion. Just for artisan development in the country. And it's something that we do encourage, because if you look just into the gap, previously the year ended March 2013, we've had about 15,000 competent artisans, or artisans that we found competent. And for this year alone, we have 18,110. So it shows therefore that there is an incline in terms of improving service delivery. I can mention the rest of other areas, whether we speak of bursaries, we speak of skills programs, and the like, you'll find that there is improvement. But then, of course, we all agree that it is not enough, and would wish to overstretch the system as much as we could. On the other one, with regard to the funding, I can say that the question of capacity, as the DDG, Corporate Services, has mentioned, is an area that is affecting us in terms of the capacity of the department, not only the skills branch. To an extent that, as a skills branch, we have developed a strategy to address the question of capacity within the branch, and we realize that we'll be able to source some funding to assist us with regard to that, because we have this huge responsibility of monitoring, especially these entities. We are having 21 sitters as a branch. We must monitor those branches. We must monitor sitters quite efficiently, effectively, and economically. So it's an area that we are looking forward to increase our capacity as well. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to be as quick as possible. The IG did present thoroughly their findings yesterday, so I won't elaborate on that, but rather to focus on some actions being taken. The first page, page 28, just to indicate that we have developed an audit action plan, and with reference to a question earlier, just also to flag that for 2012-2013, all actions were not completed. There were about 30% of actions outstanding, and some of those relate to actions specifically around performance information, which was again raised by the IG during 2013-14. And for that, there is now a decision taken to procure a performance information management system and for branches to implement those. And the first trial run is estimated to be by the end of December for the third quarter of this year to ensure that everything is in place. The issue of risk management was also critical, and I think DVG Corporate Services reported on that earlier. There is certainly, and the IG raised that yesterday as well, slow responses to some of the actions. There's also, due to vacancies and capacity constraints, some instability in the department to deal with everything, and there are also problems related to consequence management. Now, on these specifically, the Minister also agreed and met with the IG and committed to address these areas, and specific actions will be taken in that regard. For the future, reports will be submitted on progress to the Director General as well as the Audit Committee, and outstanding actions from 2012-13 will also be reported on to the Audit Committee. On the next slide, we refer to the significant uncertainties which relate to the Department's involvement in lawsuits. These are addressed, and the big issue here is the estimated value of the lawsuits as disclosed in the annual financial statements. And we will in future also liaise with the Office of the State Attorney with our legal services to ensure that accurate estimates are determined that we disclose in the financial statements. In terms of performance management, I've referred to the system that will be procured. I think the critical issue here is that, as also reported by the AG, the reliability and verification of information is one biggest concerns, especially in Program 4 and Program 5, and those will receive dedicated attention. We look at the annual financial statements and the material misstatements as reported by the AG. Those were mainly regarding interpretation issues of accounting principles. It was clarified with National Treasury and the Auditor General, and those matters were resolved and corrected by the time that the AG signed off on the financial statements. In terms of HR and compensation, the two specific issues raised by the AG is the issue around the verification of qualifications, as well as also the matter of the slow filling of posts in terms of vacant positions. The critical area there is the verification issues regarding the qualifications of people successful for posts, and they can be reported, and I think the DG Corporate Services gave some more detail earlier, that the backlog are being processed at the moment, and SAQA is being used to do all those verifications for the department. On procurement and contract management, the critical issue here is the performance of remunerative work outside employment by government employees. It was identified that five officials in the department performed work either in person or through businesses to government somewhere in the government, and of those warning letters were issued to officials that were applicable. I can also report that in two cases the relevant officials then also reported that they are no longer involved in those businesses and they have withdrawn their interest therein. We will also in the future, through our internal audit processes, do some CIPRO samples to look at the possibility of trying to limit these as far as possible. From the side of HR, which is also critically important, there will also be special information workshops and communication being issued to staff to just remind and warn them of the serious aspects around this. The other issue that is certainly very important is also contract management, and in terms of contract management, it mainly relates to the management of consultancy services, and we can expand that to the administrators that we have at our universities, at some TVET colleges, as well as the CETAS, where administrative contracts or service level agreements may not always be very specific. We have, in terms of contract management in the department, also requests which we are looking at to ensure that there are very clear contracts between the department and the consultants, and to ensure that those are monitored and that there are clear reports available when payments are being made. And I think the critical thing there is that in many cases all these are in place, but they are not necessarily secured and carefully filed and available as information to the Auditor General, and that will be looked at. In terms of our action plans, I'm just going to flag again that it will be reported specifically to the Minister, the Director General and the Audit Committee, and the first report will be due on the 24th of October, which is next week and Friday, whereafter we will send out reports to the DG and the Minister and the Audit Committee. So on the last four slides, I'll deal with them all at once by just looking at the first slide. It is just the financial outcome for 2013-14. As you will see, the total underspending by the department was 1.931 million rand, almost like equally spread between the five programs. The main reason for the underspending in all the programs is just one or two posts provided for to be filled where we were not able to fill those on time, and then obviously as a result of that, some administrative expenditure linked to that that would also not be spent. In terms of program 1, which is slightly higher than the others, we must also take into consideration the moratorium that was placed on the transfer by government departments to CETAS, our own contribution to, in our case, PCETA, and that was withheld by National Treasury, but we were not allowed to use that funds for any other purpose. And I also want to flag that in all cases, it was very difficult for the department just to maintain within this level of spending and not to overspend. Overspending is serious in terms of a program or the vote as a whole. In terms of the PFMA, we have to be very careful in managing these to ensure that we remain within our available resources. So, Chief, if there are perhaps specific questions, we will be welcome to answer those. Thank you.
Can I go ahead? Two questions. One is, this time I've remembered my questions. I'm just going to end up. One is, you've said now that a lot of the things that the Auditor General has mentioned, you have plans in place to address. Thank you very much for that. But the one thing is, some of them appeared last year. So it seems to be the case that maybe people aren't being held to account when they don't fulfill their plans. It goes back to the question of having plans, but not, you know, not implementing the plan. So if I could just ask, what happens to somebody who has a plan now and who by the time we come back next year hasn't implemented that plan? What's going to happen to them? And then the second one is this Ndlela security system. Now, I understand from the AG that this has been an issue for the last 3 years in AG reports. And this is the trade testing centre, from what I understand, at the Vuselela College. Am I right? Not. Oh, okay. It's a different Sorry? Oh, it's at Kempton Park. Okay. Because I just remember them saying at Vuselela there was a trade testing centre there, so I apologise. Okay, this seems to me to be another place that needs security upgrades, and those aren't happening, and don't seem to have been happening for a while. So if you could just comment on that, you know, why is it not being implemented, and is this something to do with funding provision? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My first question.
And this is related to the first statement that was presented to the Auditor General, that there were material misstatements, and according to the report, in terms of the differences of the prescribed financial reporting framework or the principles, I want to ask is this the first time that this has happened? And how did this come about? And speaking as an accounting graduate myself, clearly if the PFMA prescribes a particular framework, and if there are particular principles that we must prepare our statements in accordance with, how do we get to a situation, because it's not the first year that the department is operating, how do we get to a situation where statements in this manner is prepared? Is there a deficiency within the department itself in the preparation of its financial information, the consolidation of its statements, and maybe the accounting officer can weigh in on that as well, because that has an impact. It has an impact on the reliability of the information. More broadly, it has an impact also when we're talking about whether or not everything that has been reported here today as well, how useful is that information, how reliable is that information, and I think it's picked up more in the report. What is it evidenced by? And I just want to find out going forward, is there a particular system that's going to be put in place? And this is now moving away from the accounting framework and principles, but more towards the performance report. Is there a particular system that's going to be put in place on how specific achievements must be evidenced? So if there are, for example, in this program, these are the targets, these are how we're going to report on our performance on those targets, what are the particular documentation, the particular evidence that must be required so that we can rely on the evidence or the reporting back on those achievements, on those targets, so that we don't find this to be a futile exercise every single year of setting targets and reporting back on those targets. So is there a particular system that's put in place? Is this benchmarked across other departments? And how can we then come to a situation next year where we're sitting here and there aren't these concerns that have been raised by the Auditor General in terms of the performance report? My third question, with regards to the savings and the cost-cutting mechanisms, noticed under bursaries, 542 million rand in 2012-2013, 1,000 rand in 2013-2014. Now, I feel that there must be cost cutting because there is a lack of funds. Why are we cutting under bursaries if we know that that is an area where there's a shortage? Unless I misunderstand those figures itself. But I noticed that there's a table that speaks to advertising, cost cutting mechanisms, minor assets, bursaries, street services, transport, and then the training and staff development as well. So there was, I think the third, if I got it correctly, under bursaries as well. Why are we cutting? What was the reason for making that a cost-cutting priority or part of the priorities for cost-cutting mechanisms? And what do you think is the outcome of that, more particularly? And then in terms of the surrendered funds at the provincial level, and particularly in the Free State and in the Eastern Cape, of 13.6 million rand and 15.5 million rand, I just want, because I couldn't pick up much of that in the presentation, if we can get some more clarity on that. How does such a situation arise? What should those funds have been spent on? Why has those funds not been spent accordingly? Because there's clearly targets that have not been met, particularly when we're talking about our TVET colleges. And then, why is it that there's money that's then being surrendered if we're saying that there isn't enough money in the system? Because there's a competition for resources within government, I'm quite surprised that we find ourselves in that particular situation. But that will be my questions for now. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Chairperson, in the first place, the issue around consequence management. Yes, it is a problem. It has been raised by the Auditor General in terms of completion of plans, and this is one area where the minister made a specific commitment towards the IG, and which is part of the plan of corporate services to address, and that will be monitored closely, and hopefully that will improve the situation. One of the issues that will be addressed specifically is to include areas raised by the IG within the performance agreements of managers, and to deal with that as part of the normal reports provided for on the performance of managers themselves. So that is part of the action to be taken. In terms of Indela security, we will just already submitted a detailed explanation on Indela security and the difficulties around that to the committee during the last 2 days, specifically on a request received. But just to indicate that Indela is part of government property, is managed by the Department of Public Works. But for any work to be performed, public work charges the department. The department does not have money to pay public works to do the work, and therefore nothing has been done to date. However, we have put measures in place, and the department is in process to appoint 24-hour security patrols within the area of Indela to assist with the process, because we understand also that it is a critical situation. We did also submit a Treasury Committee memorandum to Cabinet to request for additional resources to do the work, and that was not approved. So as a result, it is just impossible to do it. The total cost is estimated at around 28 million rand by Department of Public Works, and we just can't reprioritize that total amount to provide those services. In terms of the financial misstatements, the misstatements occurred, as I indicated, based on interpretation matters. For example, how to disclose a specific item which is not 100% clear within the guidelines provided by National Treasury. There were 5 areas where there was, if I can call it, differences between what the IG wanted to see compared to what we interpreted the specific guidelines. From those 5 areas, we met with National Treasury, and 3 of the areas were accepted then by all 3 parties as the way in which we did it was correct. The 2 of the areas, they were then based on additional information shared between all parties, an agreement to adjust the financial statements accordingly, and therefore it's reported then as material misstatements. All those are merely just based on the manner in which we reported certain information. It was not like in fraudulent aspects or irregular aspects. It was just the disclosure thereof, which had to move from one item, for example, to another item. So those are the issues around the financial misstatements. In terms of the system for performance information, there are, I think, 3 areas there that's critical. The one is in terms of the type of information that is part of the standing operating procedures that each branch must have in place, together with the new system to be procured to ensure that the consolidation process is fine. Now, in terms of the type of information must be available, there's also a specific emphasis on the verification of the information, because that is one of the biggest issues that the IG raised, is that although there is some information submitted, the relevant verification to ensure that the information is reliable within the branch is not necessarily taking place. And then in terms of the consolidation of that information, to eventually submit reports and to have the annual report in place, there should be an additional verification check. So partly with the operating procedures in each branch that will be addressed, but then also when we look at the global system that we want to procure, which we get examples from, example, the Department of Minerals and Energy at the moment, and we do this in consultation also with the Audit Committee,
We hope to address all the outstanding matters specifically raised by the AG in this respect. The specific savings, I would appreciate if you could give us the exact details and we can provide you with a written reply to that. One of the problems there may be that the classification of items are sometimes grouped, so it may give the wrong perception that we take money where we're not supposed to take money, but it may be the wording and the classification of specific items according to the chart of accounts. So it may give the wrong impression, but we can give you the exact details and what did we move or shift specifically under which item. So if you can have that in writing, we can provide the information to you. In terms of the underspending on the conditional grant, just to emphasize that the conditional grant for TVET colleges at this point in time, that was the situation also last year, is only let's say 99% of that is compensation of employees. So it's the payment of salaries of principals, deputy principals and staff in TVET colleges through the personal system by provincial education departments. The amount that was saved, which is relatively small if we look at the total allocation, is mainly vacancies within TVET colleges. Within those two specific provinces, Free State and the Eastern Cape, we had a similar situation in the Limpopo, but that's been managed, and the other one I think was in North West, if I remember correctly. So within the Free State and the Eastern Cape, and I want to say in all the provinces, the department did advise provinces to where they see these going to be underspending on compensation of employees, that they get their treasury's approvals to use that money as a transfer back to the relevant TVET college where there is a saving, so that the system does not lose the money. But unfortunately, this could not happen in all the provinces. Eastern Cape and Free State are some of the examples where they did not get the provincial treasury approvals because it is required in terms of the TFMA to transfer the money to the TVET colleges and not to lose the money. And therefore, that will be surrendered. That money goes back to the National Revenue Fund, it goes back to National Treasury, it goes back to the pool of total revenue of government. And it's not reallocated for any other purpose within the rules of the Division of Revenue Act. So it's not like it's lost for government, although we as the sector lost that money because of other processes. We did apply to Treasury, just to mention that money be released back to the department to assist the department with the function shift processes, but that was not approved. So the money is in the National Revenue Fund and will be reallocated according to the normal budgetary processes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We have come to
the end of our meeting, but before that, I'll allow the DG a closing statement that will be followed by my closing statement. Over to you, Honorable DG.
Thank you very much for this fruitful engagement and the assistance into understanding the pertinent issues quite better, and the proposals that are coming from the members of the committee. It's always indeed very much appreciated from our own standpoint. And all the issues that have been raised, we are going to follow them, and we are not going to abdicate any sort of responsibility which is due to us. We'll ensure that we follow up in everything, including the setting of targets. We won't be looking at comfortable targets. We'll be looking at targets that are of need to the country for the entire system, because we're a post-school education and training system. We are not just a department which is there in Pretoria. That is very much important. And Chair, we'll follow up, especially on the issues that you also raised in regard to the control environment in the TVET system. And we'll provide a progress report at periodic moments in that regard. And we think we are shaping the system for the better. Of course, it requires hard work from us, and we commit ourselves that we are not going to disappoint. Thank you very much.
Well, premise with the fact that education is at the center of this radical transformation, and the fact that we are on the second phase of our transition or transformation journey to the National Democratic Society, it requires the radical socio-economic transformation of the, or yeah, there is a requirement for the radical socio-economic transformation of the broader society. But education, as far as I'm concerned, is at the center. Again, I will remind you time and again, so that we are driven by this in our work, our daily work. The fact that the President declared education an apex priority. This again puts education at the center of this radical transformation. Speaking on behalf of the committee, indeed we would like to commend the Department of Higher Education and Training for their pioneer's response manifested in the form of the development and adoption of the Progressive Post-School Education and Training White Paper, which presently is at the, I'll say, implementation stage, because we have already started implementing, though as this committee we will wait for the implementation, full implementation plan linked to a budget, so that you can see how this is going to be rolled out, and we then oversight over that rollout of the white paper implementation plan. Well, of course, key in this paper is to increase the number of skilled youth, women, and the disabled coming from the previously disadvantaged by expanding access to education and making these individuals, contributing individuals to the economic growth and social development. we are all about this. And you can rest assured, this government wants all departments to commit on how are they going to contribute to this. So our concern, though, is that as this committee, in all your programs, the department has not been able to achieve 100% of their target. All right? Program 1, there's 5 that is left out, which was not achieved. Program 2, 6 out of 19. Program 3, 11 out of 34. Program 20 is the, program 4 is 20 out of 39. This one is the highest. I'm sure something will be done here. Indeed, the highest. It means actually not a lot of work that has been done here. It's underperformance. Program 5, 3 out of 13. But all of them, we have not been able to achieve our targets. Now, to me, the targets are linked to your plan. And the people who plan, it's your good self. You cannot plan to fail. You can't. So you've got to plan in such a way that after the plan, you must then commit yourself to the complete implementation of your implementation of your plan, meaning that you have to achieve 100% of your targets. And yesterday, I know that the Auditor General spoke about monthly reports, which you can use as your measuring instrument, monthly, on a monthly basis. So which means in 1 month, if you have not been able to achieve, then you must work a plan so that in the next month you achieve. And then there is the main one that I know that the DG will be interested in, and also the committee will be interested in, is your quarterly report. That will be talking to your target, how you've achieved your targets, because obviously your plan will be divided according to your quarterly performance. So we're trying to say there is no excuse, Gigi. There is no excuse at all for these members not to be able to achieve their targets. Well, now your underachievement of your targets can be translated to underperformance. You've got good plans. But what will please us is to see these plans implemented to the letter and the budget being used correctly, because there's no way in which you can have these plans without the budget. But also what this underperformance could mean is that it could lead to the budget under expenditure, which in terms of the PFMA, under expenditure is an offense. The fact that people have not been arrested doesn't mean that it's not an offense. All right? It is an offense. Now, much as most of the presenters tried to convince us that these targets were narrowly missed, did you hear that word? I pretend that as if I'm not hearing it, but I heard it. Let's be honest, the fact remains that they were not achieved. Can't describe it in any old house, but they've not been achieved. And our interest here is to see to it that all the targets are achieved, so that we can then take this country to greater heights. Well, I will then call upon the DG to act decisively in ensuring consequences for failure to achieve the set targets on a quarterly basis. Yes, ma'am. I think that's the only way. If we are to act according to the president's call for a radical change, it means we'd also have to act radically. And unfortunately, it's you who is responsible, DG. And we can't protect you on this one because we want to see results. So you will talk to your managers when you are not here, but it is you, your head, DG. I know I don't have power, but I know there's a threat on your head when the targets are not made. It's a threat. It's not me, you know. He's an accountable officer. Well, this second phase requires that we change our ways of doing things. Now I'm talking to your management. All of us. We've got to change our ways of doing things. Please listen to this voice. Radical change. Radical change. Then it must inform and motivate you to do things differently. And the fact that this is the second phase. We've completed 20 years. Certain things have not happened in 20 years. Now, the radical change, it comes as a response to the fact that 20 years, certain things have not happened. But this time around, we've got to elevate our ways of doing things and then change also our attitude towards our work and then assist this country by taking it to greater heights. We cannot work as usual if we are to achieve on the socio-economic transformation of our democratic society. During this second phase, we are called upon to accelerate infrastructure development. Now this then says we need to shift greater levels of public spending, of our spending, to investment in infrastructure and skills. Now, as we are planning busy with our budget process, we would like to influence your thinking on this one. Shift towards infrastructure development and skills development, because this country has desperation in these two areas. We would like the department to avoid wasteful expenditure in favor of release of resources for the programs, particularly these ones that I've mentioned, your skills development and infrastructure development. But program 3, programs 4, 5, I think those ones should be either key. 2 and 1 I see, but these ones, there is a question of better management, improved management. But yes, we need money. Well, under governance, the department needs to strengthen risk management, not only, but ensure that all those public entities that account to you strengthen in this area. To me, this area is key to give us a good governance, to prevent leakage of financial resources, so that you can get these resources and redirect them where they are mostly needed. We would like the department to deal with corruption decisively. Cut out all the frills from your budget to be in line with National Treasury policy, the fiscal policy, that talks to moving away from consumption to investment. So cut down all the frills. This talks to your cost containment so that you can have more money. I'm saying this because I know that the policy also talks to a ceiling. You know, it's a budget ceiling. We want to try and break the ceiling, but you said you must try and operate within your ceiling, within the money that has been allocated, because there will be no money added. But we think, we're trying to look at where can we find more money so that we can strengthen our work. Whilst we're still going to negotiate for budget reform, working together with you, I'm sure we can do more in this area. All right? So let's try and move away from consumption to investment. It's not what I'm saying. I am talking about a policy that has got to be implemented. It was introduced in 2012. So we are all expected to implement. Government is committed to reduction of unemployment. This government has also prioritized reduction of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. Now, we would like you to assist this government by filling all the vacant posts. It will be another way of doing that. You know, I mean, these are vacant posts. This is the area where we should go. This is our little contribution, you know. But they say, take care of pennies and towns will take care of themselves. So the way that we can make a little difference, let's go in there and fill in the vacant post. And I know that the Auditor General's report also touched on this one. Well, of course, there's emphasis on value for money. We should be taken to higher levels. Let's try as this department to lead by example in this area, because we've got other people who are looking up to us. Your 26 universities, your 50 SET colleges, your 21 sitters, they're looking up to us. You know, for us to have influence on them, they must find that we don't have challenges. If we've got too many challenges, it does impact on them as well. You know, most, even at home, if you're as the head of the family, if you've got too many challenges, the children will not listen to you when you talk to them. Am I right or wrong? Am I right or wrong, honorable members? If you are an influential person and people are able to punch so many holes, it does influence, it does impact negatively on your influence. So we want you to be listened to. So it means then you've got to lead by example so that you can have influence in these, in all these other areas where you are doing monitoring and evaluation and you are taken seriously. Well, it was a meaningful and a constructive engagement. We really appreciate this and the preparedness from yourself. We will wait for all those the outstanding information by the end of the day, at least by the end of the day tomorrow, if it's late. But I'm sure you have these documents that as you get to your office, but you can just email and then start working on the on that new information. With these few words, indeed, I would like to thank all of you, thank the honorable members, thank your good self for your invaluable time. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. I'm told this lunch set. Please help yourself.